Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry, here with Max and Terry, the usual crew. Gentlemen, are you okay today?
Pretty good.
Very well.
Yeah. See, we got a dual response there, but I'm not even going to have to ask them to redo that because, you know, very well and pretty good over the top of each other. You know, you get the gist. Before we dig too deep, the people who are actually watching this, you might notice the set has had a little bit of an upgrade with Everton gear. I was going to say Everton swag, but I'm 40 years old. 40 years old. Okay, it doesn't work. So anyway, special thanks to Footy Club underscore UK. Their website is Club Shop Direct. They hooked me up with a rockin' scarf. Goodison Park sign, these awesome little dudes. You get Pigford and Sigurdsson, and both my boys were going ape shit for that. and lastly, yes, I'll be drinking my coffee from this on the show from now on. So anyway, thank you very much, Club Shop Direct, Footy Club underscore UK. Thank you very much. We really appreciate that. I was very Everton gear poor, and now I'm feeling a little better. I geeked out like crazy. I'm sorry. It was just awesome. So the next thing you might notice, and podcasters, you may be able to hear it in his voice, but Max has had a good day.
Yeah.
He's had a very good day. And the people who are watching are going to notice he's wearing a tie, you know, and he just looks... The guy already normally looks immaculate, but it's even more so now. What the hell? So Max had a great day. Max,
yep.
Do I need to set this up a little bit, or do you want to just roll
with
it?
No, I'm good. I thought you were going to say part of the upgrade was Max wearing a suit, but you didn't work that in there. the company haven't sent me the suit, by the way. I have actually had to fucking wear that. But no, I've had an excellent day by all accounts. As some viewers may know, I go to a football orientated university that's based out of the Etihad Stadium, and they run an entrepreneur competition every year. And I thought, you know what, why not have a crack? The initial thought process is to set a podcast up branded by the uni. I feel like there's a market for it. I had to prepare a pitch and a presentation, presented it to four members of the board, including one of the founders of Orlando City, and they've decided to give me $3,000 towards it, which I've got a very busy week, and that's a great start.
Nah, man, I'm ridiculously proud. If only you had some experience presenting, every week, twice a week.
No,
man, that's awesome. You had to. I can imagine you would be very confident and comfortable, and you will have done your research because that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know. So, question: it's branded by the uni. What will you actually be talking about on the podcast?
I'm not entirely sure as of yet. It's obviously still in its infancy, and I've yet to even receive many details of what direction they want to go with it. But my idea behind that is to, when they get industry specialists in, to say, rather than give rather formal structured interviews, come and do the podcast instead. And as you know, you tend to get a more relaxed and subjective conversation, which I feel like would avoid people getting misrepresented, which they so often are. So it's worth a crack.
That's awesome. That is great. I'm excited for you, man. That is...
Thank you.
Yes. And he's super young, folks, too. Jesus Christ. Yes, you are. To Mr. Gray here. You're very young. All right. So, and for the people who are listening, I just want to let you know, Terry's here, too, and he is also awesome, but he just didn't have a presentation today. All right? I'm just saying, all right? But, all right, well, we're going to be getting a big wad of Terry here in the Derby reaction, trust me. Yeah, you like my terminology there, Terry? For pod listeners, his eyes went super wide.
that, was, the show.
The format has changed, gentlemen. all right, so we're in decent spirits, which is cool. Derby happened yesterday. We'll talk more into detail on that. That's the early beginnings of your little summary for the podcasters out there. We're starting with our Derby reaction. That's what's going to happen. Max was there. Terry and I. Terry, I'm assuming you watched on the television as well, like myself. So we'll be talking about the game and how all that went. Then we're going to talk about Morgan Schneiderlin. Where did this guy come from? And is Max back in his corner? Is Schneiderlin's number back on speed dial on Max's phone? We'll see. The man crush goes on. And then we're going to talk about maybe a less man crushy subject. Theo Walcott. That's a thing. He continues to happen and start. And he's usually not the worst person on the pitch. So this is a thing we need to discuss because, you know, not a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm looking forward to watching Walcott today. And that said no one. So we got to figure that out. And we're going to finish with If You Know Your History. It's an Everton quiz. And guess what, gentlemen? Max, I just want to go ahead and apologize to you profusely for the timing of this math quiz.
Damn.
Max has done a little bit of celebrating, and so he's gonna have to do math now. I'm so sorry, and Terry, if you don't smash this one, then I'm this is your time for real. All right, guys. So let's talk Derby. I'm gonna lob a softball question at Max, and then I'll go to Terry for the more football related stuff. Max, you were there. I saw your video on the Twitters. It seemed pretty damn electric. Honestly, through the TV, I was sitting there just admiring how up for this Goodison were. Has it been the best atmosphere this season?
Yeah, by far, definitely. That it started floating around, make Goodison horrible again, and that's exactly what it was. It was just, you know, I felt good. You felt good being in there. The atmosphere was just primal. When I come in, one of my closest mates works in the little kiosk in the family enclosure where I sit, and I usually go over to him to when I get coffees and that. So I was ordering coffees and talking to my mate, and just that loud. He was like, "What can I hear?" Like, it was just, the atmosphere was that good. It felt like some sort of European game almost. I felt like Tony Bellew was going to come out when I started in the sirens, but nah, and that's a feature that needs to be used more often because it got the crowd right up for it. I think that just completely added to the atmosphere too.
You think Max used that on special games, or are you one of those who wants to hear it every home match?
Think about it though, we've got big games coming up, so I mean, yeah, like we've got the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea and Man United coming up, so it's having games to use them. They're the games, aren't they?
That's true, because we need to stay up. These are not easy matches coming soon.
I don't think we're that bad. I don't think we need to.
Oh no! When I stay up, I meant momentum. I didn't mean going down. Sorry. Yeah, I'm not. I do not mean it like that.
So, like, please don't be going that negative.
Hell no. Am I ever that negative? I'm like the naively positive American guy. Remember? Max stares through the screen and heat beams shoot out of his eyes. What are you talking about, relegation? No. It was cool to watch. I was actually watching from a bar with some other Everton supporters, and the other half of the bar were Liverpool supporters, some of whom I know and are actually okay Reds. It's funny. I feel like we just cheer. We're a little different than the Liverpool supporters, you know? I don't know. They seem to cheer the ball every time they got the ball across midfield as though it was going to be a chance. You know, you'd hear this, hey! You know, and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. We just intercepted it. We're going the other way. What are you cheering for, guys? This is not a moment. You know, and the irony of being accused of cheering for corners when that's actually the case. But yeah, it was cool. It was one of those. They took it like a loss. They did.
Yeah, they will do. Obviously, yeah. If that's the game that cost them the league, then they will do. So you can understand that.
Yeah, yeah. Terry, let's talk about the actual football that happened. The actual game. The two, like, what the hell moments, submissions to the starting lineup. Schneiderlin and Walcott were the two, I think, a lot of Everton supporters were like, Walcott the main one. Because however, they both played well the previous match, right? So, give me some thoughts about how you felt Silva set up the team and how that worked for him, basically.
To be honest, I think he's turned to Schneiderlin in the 17-day gap because he realised that the defence, they were really poor for the pre-games. All the games prior to Cardiff, the defence had been poor in several different ways. So I think he thought, well, I need to do something. I need to change the makeup of the team a little bit. He said he wasn't going to make drastic changes to how he approaches things, but he did he took Andre Gomez out of the team. You lose a lot of creativity, a lot of good possession player there. But seemingly the last two games, two clean sheets, Schneiderlin coming in has worked. We seem a lot more solid with him in the team. Now, the Walcott inclusion, I don't know what's going on there. Like, he's just not been at it for the majority of the season. And I really did think that he was going to start Luckman, because Luckman has been, every time he plays against Liverpool, any Liverpool fan will tell you that he's a good player because he's performed against them in the very, the small cameos he's had against them. He seems to like playing against them. He seems to find it, get a lot of space, maybe because their fullbacks leave a lot of space behind them. I was amazed to see Luckman not even on the bench and Walcott starting, because he's been poor, and he was poor again. But
do we know why at all about Luckman? Why? I don't know why.
No.
I think we thought he was injured, like when he was left out of the squad a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, and Silva said it was tactical. I'm under the impression it's tactical again this time, which just kind of leads me to believe that he felt like, our players on the bench that he had were a little more dangerous off the bench. This could be an attitude thing, or it could just be unfortunate numbers kind of thing.
Yeah, because I was speaking to a mate about this today, and he said that might be the testing his attitude, but literally being the situation being as it is, he is an effective player that we should utilize. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you'd exclude him like that. He can change games, particularly when we were going through the bad run. Could have done with him, but I don't understand the club's treatment of him. To be fair, because he's a very valuable player. If he is to be sold on, he could be sold on for upwards of 40, 50 million if we play him and give him time. But I'm not for excluding him at all.
Yeah, I told the guys near me, I said, I have no idea why Luckman's not in the team. He's one of the only people that we have that can come off the bench and change a game. Literally the same thing you just said, Max.
It's just like a repetitive cycle with him, though. Every season, it's like he comes in for a bit, looks good, everyone wants him to play, and then he disappears. And it's not like the players who are ahead of him are outperforming him or playing really well, and he just can't get in. It's like Walcott's, he's turning into the boo boy, but that's not really, I can't really blame the fans for that, because he's not been playing well and he's ineffective in a lot of games. And you've got another player there, this young player, who everyone rates, everyone can see it. Even the manager has gone to great lengths this season to explain, he's a great player, we're going to use him, we're not selling him, so on and so forth. And then these games come along and he's just nowhere to be seen. There's something more to it, clearly, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Walcott and about Schneiderlin in subsequent segments. We've got one on each of those guys coming up, and I have a feeling we'll delve back into Lookman at that point as well. Thoughts on the substitutes. Richarlison came in for Walcott on the right. Gomez came in for Schneiderlin, and Jink Tosun came in for DCL. What did you guys think of the subs? Max, do you want to start on that?
Yeah, I thought the initial lineup, you know, was part of a game plan to bring those subs on and try and, you know, effectively change the game. You know, when you bring Gomez in, you obviously get a lot better possession play and agility going forward than you do with Schneiderlin. So obviously that would create chances later on. So if that's what I made of the substitutions, but Calvert-Lewin, you know, he ran his legs off, but he did look gassed at the end, and I think that was something that I grasped from the end of the game, really, that Liverpool looked a lot fitter of a team. We did look knackered at the end, but it was a great performance from us.
Terry, what do you think about the subs? Pretty much spot on, or did you raise some eyebrows about one or two?
As in the whole bench or just the ones who came
on? Oh, the ones that came on, I'm sorry.
Ones who came on. Yeah, I mean, they were what they were. I mean, I thought Richarlison coming on for Walcott was the right move because Robertson had found it quite comfortable down that side until Richarlison came on, and Richarlison started giving him something else to think about because it had literally been Coleman versus Robertson the whole time until Richarlison came on. And then when Richarlison came on, he started to get behind him and pull Van Dijk across, which opened up space for the rest of the team. And it was around that time that we started to see some of our better possession and better chances. The other substitutes, Tosun, thought that was an obvious one. Calvert-Lewin had worked his socks off. He played really well. He made life difficult for what is one of the best, if not the best, defender in the world. Van Dijk was fantastic. And when I say he made life difficult, he didn't, like, you know, Van Dijk didn't struggle, don't get me wrong, but it's very easy for a lot of strikers to just shrink when they're trying to play up against a defender like that. And Calvert-Lewin didn't give him a moment's rest. And when he actually peeled off Van Dijk and went and started playing against Matip, he started to get a lot of joy. You know, some of the spins he did were really good. And I just thought it was time to replace, you know, give him a rest. He'd gassed himself, as Max said, and Tosun is a box striker, and it could, you know, on another day something could have fell for him. And who was the last one? The last substitute? Remind me.
Gomez for Schneiderlin, Richarlison for Walcott, Tosun for DCL. That's what all three. I think you commented on all.
Gomez. I was really happy to see Gomez coming for Schneiderlin because I thought at that time in the game we needed more creativity from the midfield. Schneiderlin had, even though he'd had an all right game for the most part, had started to give away some sloppy possession before he came off. He'd started to, when Liverpool substitutes came into the game, Schneiderlin started losing it, or, like, you know, having it bounce off him and stuff. And I thought it's about the right time to bring in Gomez, someone who can really, really keep the ball and move her about the pitch in different ways. So I thought the substitutes were spot on. He didn't, you know, reinvent the wheel with any of them. He didn't change formation with anything, but they were all like for like swaps for the players who I think needed to come off. So yeah, happy with the subs.
Yeah, I like them because they were positive substitutions to try to get a goal. You know, it wasn't like, let's throw in an additional center back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we were having chances, though.
Yeah.
So you can understand that it was quite a competitive game.
It really was. And that's...
like, it wasn't...
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, it wasn't like the previous derbies where we've kind of felt the inferior side, although Liverpool did have more of the ball. Both teams had the chances and just didn't take them.
Yeah.
There's only one team going to win it in that second half, though. Liverpool were by no means out the game, but I felt towards the end that we were more likely to get the winner than they were because their front three were just having a terrible day. And as they showed against Man United, when their front three aren't on it, they really labour. And don't get me wrong, you know, our home crowd, I think, bridged the gap between two teams where there is a difference in quality. But we were not at any point, you know, defending for our lives, trying to, you know, get out the game with the points. Or, you know, people say, "Oh, you celebrated a 0-0." It's like, no, we celebrated costing you a big, big chance at the title, and you know that. So, and it could have been worse for them. They come away thinking, oh, they're celebrating a 0-0. When you could have lost. You's really, you know, the two games you have played against Everton, Liverpool have played against Everton. Once they got a fluke goal in the first game, and it was an even game. And in this game, they had no fluke goal to save them. So they got the drew.
Yeah, I finished that game relieved, but annoyed because I wanted to win. This mentality, last year's mentality, I'm trying to rinse it from my brain. Okay? Last year's mentality, the idea of trying to cling on and grab a point, you know what I mean? Like, we had chances. And I was sitting there thinking that part of me would sit there and think, okay, a squeaky bum time, you know, we got to make sure we don't let a goal in. But then I'm like, no, let's win this shit. You know, and that's that right there. I like that feeling because, yeah, we could have. This is not a delusional thing. We had opportunities. DCL put a header and was going side netting until Allison saved it. You know, so. There were opportunities. They had opportunities too. Pickford looked good, made some strong saves.
Yeah, but between Pickford and Keane for man of the match for me, purely based on those two incidents, like he was clean through, and last year he probably would have scored.
Yeah.
So
last year he would have had two goals, the two chances. I thought that, you know, goal both times, especially that first one with Pickford, but good, you know, fantastic from the two of them.
Yeah, and I think full credit needs to go to our defence for that performance. Like, it was, you know, to the credit, a really good defensive performance for, you know, better than what we've seen in a while.
I was going to mention Coleman, who I think a lot of us, we've been talking about right backs. He's been playing better lately. He is stepping forward instead of, I don't know, you actually see him, I see him making a lot fewer mistakes now. And he's not looking as slow, which I don't understand how he pulls that off for the matter of like a month. But he's him and Luka Dean. You know what I mean? Luka Dean. Yeah. That one in the first half that he
made a great, great challenge.
That one where he recovered and managed to just blast it out. And, yeah. Luka Dean. People saying he can't defend. Seriously, guys? Seriously? You just watch a game. Just watch one damn game. It's ridiculous. So yeah, there's a lot of different people you can go for man of the match for just sheer effort and work rate. And again, DCL, I think his defensive play and his pressing was impressive. And the fact I think right now he is our starting striker. That's the way I'm seeing it. And I will say, although, you know, I like the idea of Cenk Tosun. But I didn't feel like we were more likely to score when he came on. It was kind of like, okay, we're losing speed. We're getting someone who may be better with hold-up play and maybe better with some of these one-touch balls. You mentioned a box striker, Terry. That's true. He is sort of a box striker. But he's just not as good in the air as Calvert-Lewin. He's just because he's not as tall. And he doesn't jump as, you know, so I was kind of, I don't know, that was the only sub where I was kind of like, eh. But you guys said you noticed that that DCL looked tired. That right there, fresh legs do a lot. And you know what? Full credit goes to Tosun. He was pressing hard, really hard. And they made a number of mistakes in the back because he and Sigurdsson were sitting there pressing so high up. Terry has asked for a little bit of time to talk about Liverpool as an entity. So, Terry, floor is yours.
It's not so much Liverpool as an entity. It's just like some of the narrative before and after the game. It's like, you know, even though the context was a little bit ropey, the World Cup finals, like, well, Klopp maybe shouldn't have characterised this as a final because didn't win that one either, did he? And then Van Dijk afterwards, so it says a lot that they celebrated a 0-0. It's like, yeah, well, your club did a handheld celebration after a 2-2 at West Brom. So, sorry, fellas. Suck it up. They're the worst like club in football for being able to give it out but not take it. They loved it when they spawned that goal. When they fluked that goal in the derby, they knew it was a fluke and they ate it up. And now we've drawn with them. We've cost them We've cost them 2 points. It doesn't mean they've lost the title, but they're throwing their toys out the pram. Oh, you cheer corners. Oh, you only care more about stopping us doing anything. It's like, oh, yeah, every set of supporters in world football has rival supporters from their own town, but not you. You don't care about us. It's all one-sided with us. You're on this. You're levitating above the rest of us. You're a different type of supporter. You don't hate your local rivals. It's just us who hate you. Listen to yourselves.
And I want to give credit to Marco Silva for knowing God, because apparently he was able to make it windy from all directions, but to only affect one team, though. It only affected one of them. Both teams didn't deal with the elements. It was just one. You know, so Silva, yeah. It's good that you know Thanks. God. Well done.
Same old. Whenever he doesn't get his results, he's everyone's best friend, and he oozes charm when he beats you. But then when he doesn't get the results he wants, he's just throws his toys everywhere and friggin' price tag hanging off his teeth, the phone he gets. Like, ha ha, ha ha, boom. Like, yeah.
Can we give some credit to the ball, boy, please?
Yeah, that's what I was getting. Yeah, I love that. He went over to front the ball boy, a kid who's probably not even 16, and the ball boy just wasn't phased. And he's just like, he tried to laugh it off now, hasn't he? Like, oh yeah, I was just having a laugh with him. The kid's dad's come out and said he didn't say anything abusive. Yeah, but it's on camera. He clearly goes up to him expecting the kid to bottle it, and he doesn't. The kid just goes, what? It's a kid. Kids are fearless. Like, you're not going to do nothing, are you, Jürgen? You just...
The thumbs up, mate. This for me. Fantastic.
Yeah. I'm not being funny. We drew the game. They can say, well, they're like going, oh, you're going to finish 10th, and you know, you're celebrating a draw against us. Like, yeah.
What is it? 30 years since they last won a title.
Since we won one. I'm not commenting Everton are better than Liverpool, but it's like, no, you can't give it out like you do if you're unwilling to take it. And that's the thing, that's the core thing that bothers me about it. Like, I don't honestly pay any attention to them until they play us, and then it bothers me loads, because they act like they're not like other football supporters. They act like they don't do what we would do. They, oh, you don't want to beat Man City. It's like, yeah, but you... I remember Gerrard playing a ball through to Drogba to stop Man United winning the league. They're the same as everybody else, but they don't think they are. They think they're better, and that's why it feels so good when you upset them.
Terry unleashed. Just saying.
The good through ball by Gerrard as well.
I know. It just, that bothers me. It's like... They've got this sort of perception of themselves that they're not like the rest of the football world, and they don't behave the way we do. And yes, you do. You're just in denial about it. If Everton were going to win the league and Liverpool could draw with them and knock them off the top spot, they'd be cheering a draw as well. They're no different than anyone else, and neither are we.
I'd also like to point out that we usually... You know, as far as accountability and taking responsibility, we usually will say, oh, yeah, well, we played like shit. This player did something wrong. This player did something wrong. And, you know, I feel like that's what we do. We look and we see ourselves as humans who actually make mistakes. And usually we take responsibility. You know, we find who's accountable. And they blame the grass. So...
Thingy, fantastic football team, but a frustrating set of supporters.
Yeah, and it's not everybody. To paint with too wide a brush is, you know, it's ridiculous. You know, we're not Sith lords. See, only Sith lords deal in absolutes. Yet that in itself is an absolute. There's your geek for the day. Yeah. Anyway. But I've got a couple of really good friends who are Reds. They're nice guys, and they're nothing like the absolute virus type of thing that you find on social media. You know, it is sick.
I'm the most level-headed, easygoing blue any Liverpool fan will ever meet. But the reaction after that 0-0 has been ridiculous. I hate anyone who can't take it, but they're happy to give it. Does me head in.
Mine too. I just want to fit in. and I got to be honest, I don't see angry Terry very often. And he's not really angry right now. He's just like, what? It's more just a confusion. Max is just psyched to be in the world right now. all right. So anything else? Any kind of parting thoughts on this, gentleman? I mean, it's 1 point at the end of the day. However, it's also -2 for the rival. So
that's where we dropped off, wasn't it? That, you know, the reverse fixture, we dropped off and went on a bad run. Hopefully, you know, that was a good performance. And we pick up from that, and we can recover some of that early season form. So, you know, it could propel us.
Needs to be built upon a 3-0 away win and a draw against a very good team. No, it's all for nothing if we don't go beat Newcastle now. We need to build on it and try and salvage the season. Still a lot to play for this season. Maybe not trophies wise or even European wise, even though that's not entirely gone, I don't think. But there's a lot of wrongs you can right. We can still beat Man United. We can still do things that we don't usually do and get some of those monkeys off our back.
Yeah. All seriousness, that was a good team. They're good. You know what I mean? Like, they're near the top of the table for a reason. Near the top. So, and Van Dijk, just reiterating, that's a player. That's a legit, really good player. So, but very wind. All right, so very, very wind. I guess that's it for our diary reaction. We're okay. That's what I'll say. We're okay. You know, I'm not out, you know, doing shots to celebrate our draw against a good team. But you know what? I'm feeling all right about life. So I'll take that. We're going to talk about Morgan Schneiderlin. Somehow he clawed his way back into the starting lineup against Cardiff, and he was back. I don't know if we thought for sure if he was going to be back for the derby or not, but he was. And you know what? He's performing well. He's protecting our defense. He's given us another shield, and frankly, the defense looks good with him in the game. It's a thing that we need to maybe start adjusting to. So let's talk about how Silva is setting up the team now that Schneiderlin is in, and how the squad is approaching matches differently in terms of what we're actually doing differently as far as pressuring, and the fact that if Schneiderlin's shielding, what are other players doing? So, Max, is it okay if I start with you on this, or would you rather?
It's more than fun. Because
it's Man Crush Morgan time, friends.
Oh no, I'm more than happy. I'm glad he's come back into the starting lineup. Like after the 17-day break, he's fourth. You know, conceding far too many goals. Let's bring him back in. Let's see what he can do. Obviously, that's obviously going to cause some sort of reaction with the Everton fans, particularly after some of his performances last season. Like, he's done everything to be on a supporters' bad books that you could do. You know, you could see him half arson games last season, but he's not now since he's come back into the team. He's screening the back four really well. And I think, obviously, in that last game against Cardiff, you see how that frees up Idriss Gueye and, you know, that to bomb on and push forward. I said in the last podcast that may just be because of the fact that it was Cardiff, and that might have been the case because Idriss Gueye didn't look to get forward as much, but that was still, I think, the idea of how the team adjusts, really. Idriss Gueye pushes forward and adds another number to the attack, and Schneiderlin screened. I mean, as Teddy said, he did get sloppy towards the end, and which is quite a tendency of him, but, you know, that's where you bring Andre Gomez in, so, you know, I'm happy if it continues to be that way.
Terry, how you feeling about the job Schneiderlin's doing?
Can't fault him for the last two games. He's made a massive difference. Like, even just statistically, 0 goals conceded in 2 games. Not all down to him, but he's a big part of it. I think he's got a long way to go to get back to being seen as a legitimate, you know, serious player in the squad, because I still think if the season ended now, he'd still be on a lot of people's lists to be sold, or on lists, you know, like the, on the Deadwood list, as it were. He can come off that, though. He said, you know, he's not so far gone that he couldn't come off it. And putting my cynical hat on, I do wonder whether this address a gay to PSG thing has sort of given him a carrot to play, you know, sort of, well, to not only train more intensely, but to try and make his point when he plays, because that Silva did say that before the Cardiff game, that in the 17-day gap, so Schneiderlin had really made a point of wanting to play. He'd really, you know, flogged himself in training to try and make the team. So he said, "I've got to put him in and see how he does." And he's earned the manager's trust for the past two games. If he can carry that on for the rest of the season, then maybe he could earn himself a spot going forward. He said, "Well, I could actually make my career here. I could carry on as an Everton player." Because I think a lot of people, even before this summer, they'd assumed that he was going to go to Marseille. It seemed to be a very heavy rumour, and that it was one of those ones that didn't seem to go away. But he's still here, and the Marseille deal hasn't materialised yet. So maybe he's had a change of heart and said, "You know what? I want to be here. I want to play for this manager, and he could still be that number six shield and player, especially if Idrissa Gueye goes and we bring in a different, you know, sort of type of midfielder to go in maybe alongside Andre Gomes and Schneiderlin. It's an interesting one, because when we got him, he was absolutely fantastic. He was the key player in the team almost immediately.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't he the first player bought with Machiri money? I think he was.
No, he wasn't, because
we had
Idrissa Gueye and Bolasie before him, remember? We bought in that summer Idrissa Gueye, Bolasie and Williams. That was all Machiri money, because it was Steve Walsh, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And then Koeman bought him in the January. He was one of the first, and he was a big Koeman player. Koeman saw him as like the linchpin of his midfield. He wanted to build his midfield around him. And that first 6 months, I could see why a lot of people called him it, but he was seen as a Rolls Royce of a player. He played in that number six role and just controlled the whole game from our point of view. And he just dropped off badly last season. No, everyone did, but he was one of the most severe, you know, changes. He'd gone from being quality to being terrible overnight. And just need to, yeah, I think now it's just the point of which Morgan Schneiderlin do you want to be? Do you want to be the one that we bought, or the one that we ended up with a little bit later on? Because if he could recapture that form when he first came in, he'd still be a quality player to have. He was so good that we sold Gareth Barry on the back of how good he was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned Silva talking about how Schneiderlin had been training lately. Schneiderlin's father passed away, I believe, earlier this season. And I'm under the impression that it was kind of affecting his mentality. And lately he's just started to kind of get a little bit more back to normal. I'm not sure what explains his half-assing toward balls in the box last season. That was really frustrating to watch. That kind of made me write him off. I'll just go ahead and say I was really angry at Schneiderlin. I was ready to sell him as soon as I saw him not sprint. Because I'm sorry. I was always, whenever I played that game, I was always a hustle guy. And so that's the only thing that I really had, was actually busting my ass for every single ball. And when somebody doesn't do that, somebody as talented as he is, that just makes me so angry. However, he's had this turnaround of mentality. His effort has gone up, and he's clearly doing what Silva wants him to do. And this complicates things in a way. I'm curious how much it complicates it for this summer in terms of transfers and whatnot. I'm really curious. If he starts playing more, does this mean Gomez plays less? Is there a possibility that Gomez is not happy with subbing in the last 15 minutes of games? and the more Schneiderlin actually gets back up to speed, does that mean he won't need to be subbed at the tail end of games as much? And if Gomez isn't playing regularly, he's not going to be happy. So does Gomez become less of a priority for us this summer in terms of purchasing him? Because we were laying out, we're thinking of laying out a decent amount of money for him this summer if he's going to be playing a lot. But if he's not going to be playing as much, I don't know, I think he's a vitally important player. I'm making conversation here because I think it's interesting to analyze. You know what I mean?
Particularly if Idrissa Gueye is on his way to Paris. Mm-hmm. I think he is a priority for the summer. And I really like that idea of what Teddy brought up before, that of a three-man midfield with Schneiderlin, Gomez, and, you know, whoever. But that could, you know, be another target for the summer.
I think that's jumping the gun a little bit as well. Like, Schneiderlin's come in and we've had two decent games with him. Like, still don't think for one second that he's ahead of Andre Gomez in the pecking order. I think Gomez is just a little spell out of the team, and Schneiderlin will very quickly come out of the team if the manager wants him to. I think Gomez is still the priority player for the summer. I think he's the type of player that Silva want to build his Everton team around, and I don't blame him, to be honest, considering how good he was.
So, if Drissigay leaves, we have to replace him. There's going to be a replacement. Gomez will not be the replacement. It will be someone in the mold of a Decore, right? We know that's the type of player that Silva salivates over, and he makes a huge part of his squad. So that player would be in. Gomez would be in if we purchase him. Schneiderlin, depending on which Schneiderlin we get, you're right. It's hard to. All this conversation depends on Schneiderlin actually maintaining consistency, which he hasn't done for a while. So we're going to see if that actually continues. And all this also, not to be. Let me put on my cynical hat. It could be Schneiderlin's just busting his ass because he wants to be able to get a move this summer. So there's all these different, you know, reasons for this stuff. Right now it's a good problem to have, though. I'd be curious, you mentioned that three-man midfield with Schneiderlin, Gomez, and whoever the replacement would be for Idrissa Gueye. I guess that makes things a little complicated as far as Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at this point, it's trying to work that out. I'd be curious how that would work. I think it seems like games in which we need a goal, Sigurdsson stays in, Gomez subs in for Schneiderlin. Games in which we want to protect a lead, Sigurdsson goes out, Gomez comes in. You know what I mean? It's one of the patterns. I think we could see a similar pattern with if you replace one or two of the center options that we have. So.
Got to remember as well, you know, when you think about it, if we do sell Idrissa Gueye, which looks quite likely at the minute, then we've only got really as permanent midfielders Schneiderlin and Davies and McCarthy, who never really plays due to injury. So buy Gomez and then replace Idrissa Gueye, you've still only really got four viable midfield options for a middle three. If you don't include McCarthy, you've got Schneiderlin, Davies, new player X and Gomez. So I think Schneiderlin, you know, the sort of revival of Schneiderlin under Silva might just be, you know, pragmatism. Going, he's an all right, you know, a decent player if I can get him playing. And I can't afford to spend all my transfer budget buying three or four midfielders. I need other positions. I need, you know, right back. I need right midfield. I need forward. I can't buy a whole new midfield department. I might have to get something out of Schneiderlin and make him an option again, which he has done these last two games.
There's nothing wrong with depth. We've talked about it before. The idea of being able to rotate and not lose anything. Mm. You know, the idea of being able to make some subtle changes in the middle of a game that tweaks just maybe changes a slight pressure point here or there just because of a slight difference in a player. I feel like Silva definitely wants two good options at every single position, every one, and that's the type of depth he wants. And we don't have that, so it could be we're talking about this. It just depends on which players are comfortable not starting every single game. And those are the type of players that seem like they're all about the team and want to be here. The players that want to play every single game and have to and want those assurances probably won't stay long at our club. I don't, it doesn't seem like Silva is down with that. So, interesting. It's a great thing. He came back. He's winning me back, Max. He's winning me back. Your bud. I like a good redemption story.
For me, it's just the type of player that he is, the kind of lackadaisical roaming midfielder that screams the back four. When he plays well, doesn't get as much credit as he should. You know, I think a larger example of that is like an Ivan Rakitic, just that type of player. I wish he was a bit more agile and could push forward a little bit more. Yeah, I don't mind.
You're a sucker for an unheralded, like, defensive center mid or center mid type of player who doesn't get the credit they deserve. That's one of the things I've noticed. You're just like, oh, give me that player that nobody mentions. That's my guy.
You know? If I could have Gareth Barry back, I would tomorrow. Telling you.
I remember you mentioning, making sure I mentioned Ilkay Gundogan from City. He's not really the player you think of when you think danger men from City, but you're like, damn it, he's so good. I'm like, yeah, he is. So, oh man. So, anyway, Morgan Schneiderlin. Anything else on this guy, fellas? Anything that we feel like we have not brought up? He's adding a different dimension to our, and he's allowing other players to kind of become more creative, Idrissa Gueye in particular. And you've noticed that we are getting the ball to Sigurdsson more often with Schneiderlin in as well. That could be just a coincidence and a change of focus for Silva. But, yeah, I like it, though. We're actually moving the ball to the center more instead of just bombing the flanks and crossing back.
Since we don't mention him very often, I'm just going to get this in now. Thank God he changed the squad number. A midfielder having number two is a travesty.
We all groaned when that happened. That was ridiculous.
Oh, that hurt my soul when I saw that. And when I found out he'd changed it, I was so happy. Just that alone just gave him some points in the plus column for me when he changed it to 18.
Mm-hmm. And on that bombshell. All right. So Morgan Schneiderlin. He's back, new and improved. Yeah, we'll have some of that. It's good. And Max continues to smile. He's like, I knew it the whole time. All right, so that's it for our Morgan Schneiderlin segment. This guy's name is a lot of times accompanied by a groan. You hear that often. People look at the starting team, and they go, ugh, Walcott, you know what I mean? It's a lot of groaning. Most Everton supporters at the moment are not really on the Walcott hype train, if I'm allowed to say that, being 40 years old. But he's been starting lately. Marco's been running him in the starting lineup. Why do we feel like Silva's giving him the nod lately? Terry, you want to start there? I think off camera you were lamenting the same question. So, would you have anything you want to start us off with that one?
I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand why he's persisting with him when there's another really good option in the squad who everyone from fans to, you know, sports media to the club itself, Adamola Luckman, the manager, the director of football, everyone has made a big deal about how he's a big part of the squad and, you know, he's gonna play and he's not even on the bench at the minute. And it just, Walcott's not playing well. Now, I was saying off camera, people are getting a little bit, too extreme with Walcott. For me, he's not, certainly not on my to-sell list. There's a lot of players I think we need to shift out before we even start to consider shifting out Walcott. I think over a season, a player like him with his experience and his quality, he has got quality, will be invaluable. You'll need him across a season. But at the minute, there's no way he should be starting. Adam Ola Luckman should be starting ahead of him at the very least. And if not, how well Bernard's playing, try Richarlison on the right. He's played him up front, he's played him on the left. I'd play him on the right. He might not be as effective there cutting inside, but, you know, that's the same thing with Luckman. Luckman prefers to play on the left, but he gets made to play on the right and make the most of it, so we could do it with Richarlison. Say, right, well, you play in straight lines, you're direct, you're powerful, you're quick. Get on that right-hand side and give the left-back a problem and cut inside if you want. I just don't see what Walcott is doing at the minute to keep his place, because he's not adding anything to the team, and he seems to be coming off every game, and it's not an unjust frustration from supporters. They know there's other players who can play there and should be playing there, and they're not seeing them. I just don't get it.
Max, obviously Marco Silva knows a lot about football. but this is a widespread complaint from a lot of supporters, like what's the deal with Walcott getting the start continuously? He's the only natural right wing player that we have out of all of them. I mean, we've got three players who naturally slot into that left forward position: Luckman, Bernard, Richarlison. They all prefer to be on the left, despite being mm-hmm. right footed players. They all like to cut in. So Walcott's our only natural fit. But is it his straight line speed the reason that he's playing more, or is it? I mean, I actually think felt like the past two games he tracked back more than I had seen him track back the rest of the season.
I agree. Like, obviously coming back after that break, you look at the opposition, Cardiff, very slow static defense, having that type of breakaway speed. Introducing Walcott, and you know, it worked. Obviously, he didn't have as great as the games. And when you compare that, and I think where the complaints are coming in from Evertonians is when you compare that to the left hand side and how Bernard's busting his ass full 90 minutes, you know, it just doesn't compare. Walcott's often caught out, and it's magnified by, for example, Coleman's poor. You said Coleman has kind of started playing better. But he just come off a poor run as well. And that just, you know, he was exposed thanks to lack of coverage on the right hand side by Walcott. Mm. So, you know, it's just a lack of consciousness, isn't it? And Walcott's a funny case. Obviously, he broke through as a youngster and he had such, you know, potential going from Southampton to Arsenal. And he personally wanted to play as a centre forward, which I do think, as Teddy said, that could be useful going forward. But I don't think he's ever quite lived up to that potential.
I mean, I agree with that. I think a lot of Arsenal supporters would agree with you on that as well. He was so hyped. He was so hyped when he was young and up and coming. You know what I mean? So
I still think he could be really effective in our system though. If he started, as I say. Look at Schneiderlin and how he's decided to start up in his work rate in training, and you're starting to see the result of that. If you know, work on more defensive coverage, and I'm sure the performances would simply improve.
I think there's something going on with him. I don't think he's a happy guy right now. This is going to seem weird and like treating him like a human, and I apologize to viewers and listeners for treating Walcott like a human. But when you actually look at his face when he's playing, he looks grumpy. He looks like he's not really happy to be out there. It's weird. It looks like he's in a bad mood almost all the time. You don't really see him smiling. I felt like last season you actually saw him, which is crazy last season, because that was
last season he came in and made the difference, though, when he was brought in.
He
was that injection of speed that we needed.
And, he had confidence, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was the only fast player in the whole team, really, so he stuck out a mile and they just played off that.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I think I was just thinking then as you were talking, maybe it's just purely tactical why he's in the team, because if you think about it, whenever we transition from defence to attack, he seems to be the outball. They always look for him. Now, maybe it's because he is so fast, and I forget, you know, what he's doing with the ball. Because he's so fast, maybe he's making sure that the opposition don't play too high a line. He might just literally be there to pin the opposition defence back. Because even against Liverpool, every time we got the ball at him and transitioned it out of defence into going forward, you'd get it to Walcott, and he'd be looking to, you know, he didn't really have it in him to go past Van Dijk. He'd try and cut in and try and dribble past Van Dijk. But that seemed to be the thing, pin their defence back. If they play too high, we can put it over the top of them, and Walcott is in, and he's fast. You know, regardless of how fast Liverpool's defence were, Walcott is faster. He's not as, you know, he's not saying nothing for his quality, but pure over a foot race, there's no one faster in our team. Even the other fast players can't match Walcott for pace. So maybe it's just that. He just keeps the opposition from playing a really high line and pressuring us.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair to him, he had one really good opportunity first half that Max and I were talking about off camera. He had a nice breakaway where he pulled away. And then there was another one, I feel like it was a one-touch volley. He had some opportunities. But right now, I have zero confidence in him being clinical. You know what I mean? I feel like his confidence is down. He is part of the team where there's this low, and I think with more results, that confidence will come back. Getting a goal here or there, he's going to feel better. He's going to look stronger. He's going to enjoy his football more. You know, I just think that will happen. And Terry, I think it is tactical. I think that's exactly why he's starting right now. I don't necessarily know that it's an effort thing. I think Silva sees Bernard on one side, and he feels like we need another outlet to go deep if we need to. And we did try to go deep often yesterday in the derby. So, yeah. I wrote down a question, does he have a place in the squad next year? I do think he has a place in the squad next year. I think you guys agree. It's, you know, we're not really thinking, hey, let's sell Walcott right now. We're not as down on him as I think a lot of people are. I think it's easy to connect one face with a losing streak and say, that's our guy, you know? But I don't know. He is a natural right-wing player. I think a lot of it's going to depend on who we bring in. Who else is coming in, and is somebody else not happy, and how that could work?
I definitely think we're going to buy a player in his position, but with two players for each position, he'll have to compete with someone. Whether Luckman stays or what's another question. But I think that whole right hand side is probably going to get, you know, new players put in this summer, and then Coleman and Walcott will have to have a real fight on their hands to get their place, and they could end up being cover for those players. But so who that is remains to be seen.
Yeah, definitely. Be really curious the type of what positions that Marcel Brands brings in. Really curious about the positions, you know, especially if people who have shown flickers of promise end up leaving. I'll be really curious as to why. Yeah, man. So Walcott not really performing the way we'd prefer, but at the same time, it's not as bad as a lot of people make out. I think we'd agree, and we think the reason he's playing is tactical, because of his speed, essentially. And we don't really have anybody else that fast that can play that side. We just don't. So, all right. I guess that's it for our Theo Walcott segment. We'll see if he actually starts next game. No idea on that one. Against, Newcastle? Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for If You Know Your History, the Everton-based quiz segment that pits Terry against Max in a cage match of Toffee's wit and might. Spiel over. So this is going to be a quiz where it's a math quiz. So there'll be some music to match. So, gentlemen, math time. Do you have a pen, paper, calculator, abacus? Okay, let's get started. Gentlemen, take Yakubu's squad number at Everton minus My guy Gaze, squad number at Everton. Times, Mikel Arteta's squad number at Everton. Plus, Luis Saha's goal tally at Everton. Do we understand the question? Do you need me to repeat any part of the question?
We do, but what the squad number when Arteta has assigned?
Yeah, he had two squad numbers.
He had two squad numbers.
I think you should assume that this is not the one when he signed. It's the one that he wore for the bulk of his years.
Okay.
Any other questions before we start the clock? You understand, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. And begin the clock. This should be it. Gentlemen, Terry, what was your total number?
I've probably got it badly wrong because I've got like minus 133. Run me through the questions again. I think I've got it right.
Yakubu's squad number at Everton.
Yeah.
Minus Magai Gay's squad number at Everton.
Yeah.
Times Mikel Arteta's squad number at Everton.
Yeah.
Plus Luis Saha's goal tally at Everton.
Yeah, minus 133. Don't know how. Because I've got 22 minus 19 times 10. Plus 34, so maybe it's just 133. I don't know, but problem.
Hold on, do your math again. Okay, do your math again, Max. What was your total?
57.
And how did you get that?
Right, because I got 22 for Yakubu's squad number.
Right.
Minus 19 for Magage's squad number, and then this is where I was like disputing. Mikel Arteta's, because I put 6 down initially, but now I think you mean 10. And then plus Luis Saha's goal tally, 27.
Okay, I've redone my math, and I've got 65.
You have 65?
65 when I wasn't doing my maths like an idiot.
Yeah, when you were describing what your total was and you were walking me through it, I was like, Terry, there's no way you can come up with 133 from that.
Yeah, it was a problem with how I was doing the math. So I've redone it, like, with a brain, and I've got 65 now.
Max, do you have any problem with him redoing his math, or do you think he should have stood on that negative 133?
I've got no problem at all.
I just wanted to make sure we were being fair here. Okay.
Yeah, stop taking the piss with the math thing. I was the one that was meant to have the problems with it.
Yakubu's squad number was 22, minus Magage's squad number, which was 19. That gives you 3. Times Mikel Arteta's squad number, and 10. So that's 30. Plus Luis Saha's goal tally at Everton, 35. So the total should be 65. Max, are you sure you don't want Terry to stand on that negative 133 now?
Oh, good.
Oh, I didn't think so. You're all, like, totally chill about most things, so I figured you would be fine. Terry, I was like, what kind of new math are you doing over there? Because you were walking me through it, and I'm like, wait, all your numbers are right for the most part. How on earth are you coming up with that? So, there was a tiebreaker. just for fun, because I've seen him recently on that Sunderland show, which has broken my heart. How many appearances did Darren Gibson have for Everton?
A lot less than what he should have.
55.
What'd you say, Terry?
I went with 55.
55. Max, what do you got?
I'll go 67.
67. Max is closest on this one. It was 69. 51 starts, 18 as a sub. So, Max, you, to be somebody who was out celebrating earlier, you've done all right. Done all right tonight. All right. Good things. Good things. All right. So, Terry, congratulations. You are the wiener. You've done well. Well done, sir. Max, you also did well, just less well. That's it happens. Terry, what song are we going to play out to?
I've already got it picked out. Don't need to go through the Spotify. I'm going to do a little tribute to Max on his good day, his celebratory day, and his success that he's had this morning. So I'm going to go with Champagne Supernova by Oasis.
Oh.
Love that, Teddy. Thank you very much.
That's a good one.
Many layers of celebration. Oh. Champagne, Oasis, Max the Lord.
That is good. Yeah, I
thought you were going to go for Money by Pink Floyd, but no, I'll take that
one.
Yeah,
it could be in that as well. But I wanted to stick with Oasis.
Yeah, this is one of those that that was pretty mainstream here in America on MTV and the radio. I heard it often. Yeah, love that one. I don't even know what else to add to this one to, like, you know, analyze Champagne Supernova. I don't know anybody who's like, you know, I hate that song. It's just kind of, you know, nice.
Apparently Liam went into a back of a studio and ripped that in like 15 minutes, apparently. If I'm correct, and if that's the right song, because I remember watching a documentary, and he said one of, like, the big ones he wrote in, like, 15 minutes Jesus. Straight at the button. So, like, geniuses. They're just amazing.
Yeah. What the hell? Well, I guess as everyone is dreamily oozing out of our podcast to Champagne Supernova, it is time to end the big show. Congratulations, Max, on your big day. I will I'll have a pint for you tonight when I'm at my house, watching The Wire with my wife. So, if you've been listening via podcast, we sincerely appreciate your presence and your ears, which have been graciously taking in our voices. Thanks for that. If you want to check us out on YouTube, you can see our faces to match our voices with our faces. I mean, I'm not really going to recommend it because I see me all the time, but hey, these guys are great. So just check it out if you want. If you want more Terry, check him out on the Liverpool Echo Fan Jury. He'll be there every once in a while, so look at his Twitter for that. The details are below the description. Max's details are below there as well, so you can check his Twitter for him just talking about all his hot stuff that's been happening to him lately, but also he'll be on a lot of the Toffee Blues website. He does a lot of analysis on there, so check that out. All things Everton on the Toffee Blues website. You notice I'm trying to do a nice, smooth voice. I'm not trying to be as grating as normal because Champagne Supernova's on. Yeah. So please follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You'd be a lot cooler if you did. I think that's all. Gentlemen, thanks so much. Appreciate your time. Terry, good to see you, man.
Oh, always a pleasure, fellas. See you soon.
Max, congrats. Don't get too crazy tonight, man.
Congratulations.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. I'm gonna. All right, man.
Matthew McConaughey. Then what? If not everybody wants him, that's the prequel. What's the other one?
Are you talking about Dazed and Confused? Yeah.
Yeah, I might watch that, you know.
Yeah, you should. It's been a while since I've seen it, too. It's awesome. All right, guys. Thanks so much. And, yeah, we'll talk to you next time. Bye. Slowly walking down the hall, faster than